Tonight's shiur is for the week of Parshas Bo. We begin with a shaila of a shul who unfortunately was plagued with people talking during davening, during laning, etc. Chas v'shalom. And one of the members. He was fed up. He said, this can't go on. It's a chil kodesh, and very, very upsetting to him, the whole matzav. He decided that after seeing what the Mishnah Berurah brings from a sefer called Vavi Amudim, that a shul that suffers from people talking, they should nominate a person to act as a type of bouncer, so to speak. As somebody that's, you know, puts the people in their place and tells them off in order to keep the silence. So this fellow, let's call him Reuven decided that he would like to take upon himself this job. So he approached the Gabayim and they said, you know, please, by all means, if you think you can help the matzav here, we'll, you know, be more than happy. So they made him in charge. So he took the job very seriously, and he would go around, he would snap his fingers at people to make them stop talking, and sometimes even bang on the table in front of them, and he put in a lot of hard work in this area, and he saw the fruits. Baruch Hashem, the people actually started to be quiet and stop talking. It was working, Baruch Hashem, and it became actually a shul which was quite silent during the davening and the Kriyas HaTorah. Okay, so what's the shaila? Well, unfortunately, things took a turn for the worse. How? Well, Reuven's father decided to join the minyan. Now, happened to be that Reuven's father was one of those gabbers. Can't stop talking. And after all Reuven's hard work, here comes his father, and he starts talking during davening, talking during laning, and yapping, and to this one and to that one, and cracking jokes. And if that wouldn't be bad enough, he would keep his cell phone on, and he'd actually answer his calls during the middle of davening, and he created havoc in the shul. Now, Reuven was, you can imagine, a big dilemma. He didn't know what to do. On the one hand, what was he supposed to do? Go start snapping his fingers at his father, banging on the table in front of his father. The truth is, he did speak to his father about the situation, but it didn't help, and he kept on talking. So, what is he to do? It seems like somewhat disrespectful to, like I said, bang on a table in front of his father in shul to have him stop talking. Maybe he thought because of the situation he should just leave the shul. Another option, go daven, find another Reuven, to find another place to daven. Anyways, he's at a quandary. He didn't know what to do. So he asked the shaila. What answer was he given? Well, we begin with the halachas of Kibud Av V'Em, Shulchan Aruch Yeridei Siman Reish Mem, Sif Yud Aleph. It says, Ra'as Aviv Shavar Al Divrei Torah. A person sees his father that is transgressing the Torah. He or had transgressed the Torah. Lo Yomar Lo, he shouldn't say to him, Avart Al Divrei Torah. Said, Abba, you've just sinned. You did this in this Avera. No, that's not Kavod. Elo Yomar Lo, Abba, Ketuba Torah Kach V'Kach. Said, Abba, you know, it says in the Torah this and this and this, so that the father will take the hint and hopefully and do tshuva. And this way he's not embarrassing him, he's just mentioning what it says in the Torah. So we see that even when a father is mamish transgresses the Torah, the son doesn't have a license to do what he wants, to give his father mussar. He has to do it in a very kavodic manner. Even though the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, Rav Chaim ben Attar, Zchuto Yagen Aleinu, he says in the Sefer Rishon LeZion, which is on the Shulchan Aruch, then in here in Kibud Av V'Em, that he says that which the Shulchan Aruch says, you know, you have to be careful and do with kavod and etc., etc., which is all 100% true. He says that's only though if the father, you know, will take the hint and you know, change his ways. He says, but if we're talking about a father, that if the son will tell him nicely about the Isser, he's not going to pay attention at all, then he has to do whatever he can do to try to stop his father from doing the Isser. Well, it seems, according to this, or Achayim, HaKadosh, that maybe here Reuven, he did try, so maybe he has to, give it to his father. However, truth is that this Or Chaim is really talking about a father who's a mamish a rasha. Okay, so a father's a rasha. He's not listening because he's rishus. Okay, so then a person, you know, has to sometimes, you know, whilst kavod Hashem, which takes preference over kavod aviv, he has to, you know, give it to him if need be. However, he says here in our case, Reuven's father is not a rasha. He's unfortunately this. You know, gets taken into the Yetzer Hara, and unfortunately people don't think it's such a big of area, though it is, to talk in shul, but it's done, unfortunately, and people do it, and it's a common thing. So somebody who does such a thing is not looked at like a Rasha Marusha, because this is unfortunately what people do, as wrong as it is. So, therefore, he comes out, bottom line, that he is not allowed to deal disrespectfully with his father. He's not allowed to tell him off in shul, snap his fingers, bang on the table, etc. So maybe he should leave the shul then? So he says, Chas v'shalom. He shouldn't leave the shul either, though. Why? Because since he's being very successful in keeping the noise level down, so he has responsibility to continue doing that. As it says in the Gemara in Shabbos, Kol mi she'efshar limchos b'anshei beiso v'lo micha nitpes al avo n'anshei beiso. A person has an ability to stop his family from sinning, he must do so, and if he doesn't, it's as if he sinned. So here, Reuven, he has responsibility, because he does have within his availability to stop these people from talking, so he must continue to do so, and if he doesn't, it's considered as if he's talking. So he should not leave the shul. Aye, but staying in the shul and, you know, not stopping his father properly from talking, but stopping everybody else is not going to look too good. You know, people are going to say, yeah, you're your father, it's okay if he talks, right? It's only us. Okay, it's true. It's going to be a little bit of an uncomfortable situation for Reuven, but he has to let the people know, listen, I have to deal with my father differently because he's my father. That's all. And just to bring this point home to them. Hopefully they'll accept. So that's the conclusion. And must deal with his father in a respectable manner, despite him being a talker in the shul. And as we said, leaving the shul is not an option for Reuven. Okay, we move on. Same topic, actually. A little different case. Here we have Reuven, a different Reuven. This Reuven in our next Shaila is not the good person, but he's the yapper. So here's Reuven, again, yapping in shul during tefillah, kriyas haTorah, etc., etc., etc. And they asked him to stop, wouldn't listen, fortunately. So what happened? One day, the Gabbai calls up Reuven for an aliyah. In the Shabbos, it was Chamishi, you know, fifth Aliyah. Yamod, Reuven, Ben, Ploni, whatever, calls him up. Now Reuven was so busy talking, he didn't even hear the Gabbai call him up for the Aliyah. So Shimon decided to take advantage of the situation and teach Reuven a lesson. So he goes up to Reuven, he says, Reuven, he says, the Gabbai just called you up for Hagba, to lift the Sefer Torah. So he runs up to the bima, he grabs the Sefer Torah and lifts it up and says, "V'zos haTorah asher sam Moshe." And everybody's looking at him like, "What's this guy doing?" Reuven immediately picked up on what happened, and I can imagine he turned all types of colors. He was totally mevuyash, embarrassed, he puts the sefer down, says his bracha, and he really did not feel like stepping foot again in that shul. Can imagine. Truth of the matter is, the ploy worked, and when he did come back, he wasn't talking anymore. However, Shimon, who pulled this trick on Reuven, he came with the shayla and asked, was it a proper thing what he had done? It was, Mamish embarrassed Reuven totally, in front of everybody, Malbim Chavira B'Rabim. On the other hand, he did it, so to speak, L'Shem Shemaim, to stop him from talking, and it worked. So, what's the story? Was it okay what he did or not? That's a shot. Says in the Shulchan Aruch, like we saw before, in this Nor HaChaim Simen Kuf Kaf Dalet, Sif Zayin, that you're supposed to sharply protest Goarim v'Moseach b'Emtza Tefila. Somebody who talks during Davin, you have to give it to him in a sharp manner. However, he says that's by, verbally. You tell him off, you say, don't do this, you have to be quiet, you can shush him or whatever. That, okay. But to pull a trick, start pulling tricks on people in order to, embarrass them, whatever, so they should stop talking, he says that's already taking it too far. Besides being a very, very big embarrassment, but it's only likely to lead to all kinds of fun. He's going to get upset, and he's going to do this, and this guy is going to trick him, he's going to trick him and do things that it's going to cause craziness in the shul. So therefore, it's not a proper thing. If you want to do something like that, you have to get reshus from either the Beis Din or the Marad Asra. But stam hazoy, you should not pull tricks on people in order to get them to stop talking in shul. However, if, let's say, Reuven would have had an aliyah, a regular aliyah, and afterwards Shimon or somebody else of the call would come up, give a klop on the bima and says, Raboisai, I am protesting Reuven's conduct here in shul, that he's a talker, and I'm protesting that. I'd like to make it known. Doing something like that, he said that would be totally fine. That would be fine, again, if he was previously warned and everything, he didn't accept the warning, to get up like that and clap on the bima and protest verbally, he said that's totally, totally acceptable. Another Beis HaKnesses shaila. Move away from talking in shul to another interesting shaila. Here we are again with another Reuven number 3. And he owned a very successful business in jewelry, diamonds, etc. And Reuven hired Shimon as a worker. And he saw that Reuven gave him impression as being very, very responsible and a good, solid worker. So he took him in and Mamish, shared his the secrets of the trade with him and everything. Mamish treated him like a partner almost. Little did Reuven know that Shimon was a big thief and scoundrel. He would secretly steal all types of money, very chashev amounts of money from the business without telling Reuven, of course, in a secretive way. Well, Shimon, I guess, was not too smart because he started, all of a sudden people saw him pull up in a fancy latest model car, and he starts fixing up his house with fancy renovations, and he's almost acting like a very wealthy man. People started wondering, that's strange, how did Shimon get into all this money all of a sudden? And not only that, he donated things to the shul, the bima, and the parochas, and the fancy parochas, etc., the shul, etc., and the ilui nish, embroidered in the parochas, this was into ilui nishmas of his father, etc., etc., etc. Anyways, because of this, people started questioning what's going on. And of course, Reuven himself started getting very, very suspicious. So he hired some private investigators. And sure enough, they came back with the news that Shimon had stolen a lot of money from the business. So Reuven took him to Beis Din and led to the courts, whatever it might be. And the final results were that the Beis Din, they paskened that, in fact, Shimon owes a tremendous, tremendous sum of money to Reuven. That was the psak. So Shimon says, okay, fine, no problem, I'll pay back everything, I admit it, you know, I'll pay everything to the last penny, no problem. Ha! Nothing doing. What happened? That night, Shimon ran away to Chutz Laretz and disappeared. Couldn't find the guy. Okay, what happened next? Next thing you know, Reuven goes into the shul, and he starts taking down the paroches in front of the on the Aaron. So the gabbai says, what are you doing exactly? Reuven, what are you taking the paroches down? He says, why am I taking paroches down? I'll tell you why I'm taking paroches down. Who donated this paroches? Shimon. What do you mean? Shimon, I think it was with his money. Where did he get the money for this paroches? It's my money that he took from my business. So I'm taking down the paroches, and I'm having it, you know, altered, and I'm going to take off in his name and the name of his father, Ilui Nishmas, and I'm going to put on my name, my father's name. It's my paroch, it's not his. He bought it with my money. Okay, and he added to his taina, and he said, you know, we all know what the Gra says. The Gra says that even if one nail that was used for building the shul was stolen, he says it affects the kedusha of the makom, and people's tefillahs in the shul are going to be more difficult to be answered if there's even one stolen nail. And here the bima, the parochas, it's all stolen money. So it's who's going to want to daven in a shul like this? So I'm taking it back, and I'll give it under, you know, myself. Anyways. That was the Shaila. Does Reuven have a right to do so? To take the parochas, etc., because it was bought with, as he claims, money that was stolen from him. The answer that was given was that Reuven is not allowed to do such a thing. It's true. Maybe Shimon used the money, but that's his business that he has to take up with Shimon. You know, Shimon owes him 100%. But what was bought with that money, that's already belongs to the shul. That's finished. It's the shul's property now. It was bought with him. Shimon, you know, stole money. But Lamaisa, once it's here, it's purchased, it belongs to the shul, and Reuven has no right to it. He has any right he has is just to take Shimon, you know, to get the money from him. Shimon disappeared, okay, what can you do? But he may not take down the paroches. What about his taina, what the Gra said? But who's going to want a shul that has stolen things in it? You know, the Gra says even and one nail is stolen. So he said that that's different. Why? Because with the nail, the actual stolen article is used in the shul to build the shul. That's a problem, Bemet. You know, that the nail is here in the wall or whatever. It's in the shul. However, here we're not plastering the walls with money that was stolen. The money was stolen and things was bought from. It was exchanged already. That's already a step removed. We're not using the stolen item in the actual shul. We just purchased things for the shul from the stolen money. That's a different story already. And that what was done is done. And so we have to leave it. He brings here that there was a maisa similar, that there was a fellow and he donated all types of things to a shul, fancy things, parochet, bima, whatever, different things. And in the end, he was found to be a big, big thief, and he was taken to trial and jail, whatever. And the Beis Din actually paskened in that situation that they should take down the sign. There was a big, you know, sign that this is a plaque, you know, that this is donated by so-and-so. And the shul was, they were very worried that, you know, once the press gets involved, and they say, oh, look at the, take pictures, and you see this guy, this thief and scoundrel, well, he was, you know, he donated all these things, and they're giving a haven for these thieves, or whatever, and they saw it could be a chil Hashem, so the basin gave the authority to take down the sign, the plaque, with this thief's name. So again, it could be the same thing over here, that the Beis Din has to decide that maybe, true, if we leave the parochas with this guy's name on it, you know, who stole the money from Reuven, okay, if the Beis Din feels it could lead to a Chilul Hashem or whatever the case might be, then okay, 100%, the Beis Din has authority to do so. But Reuven, he himself has no right to take the law into his own hands in this situation and to remove the parochas. While on the topic of parochas, there's a cute, maybe sad, but cute maisa, that there was once a yid that he donated a parochas for a shul, and he had it embroidered, you know, written on the parochas, you know, donated by, you know, his name and his wife's name. Fine. So, as time went on, though, this guy divorced his wife. And he came to the gabbai of the shul, and he says, I want my wife's name taken off the parochas, because she's not my wife anymore. I divorced her. I don't want my wife's name next to mine on the parochas. Take it off. So the gabbaim asked the shaila, are they allowed, or can they do so? Can they, you know, fulfill the request, the wishes of the husband? So this shaila was brought to Rav Elyashiv Zatzal, and he answered the following. He said, so Rav Elyashiv answered, he said, listen, if this guy, you know, doesn't want to have his wife's name next to his on the parochas, so he should have his name taken off the parochas. That was his answer. Why? So he said, because putting his wife's name on the parochas, he said, that's a gift. It's a matana. You know, you're giving a nice matana, that you're having her name inscribed on the parochas that belongs to the shul. So you can't just take away a gift. Once it's a gift, you gave a gift. You have no right to take it away from her. So therefore, if he wants his name not next to hers, then goodbye his name. Next, we move on away from the shul this time and into the courts. There was a fellow, Jew, who had to show up for trial in court. And the first appearance that he had to, you know, show up in court, he came 10 minutes late. Now, that's something you don't do. You don't walk into your, you know, trial 10 minutes late. The judge was not happy, to say the least, and he was going to fine him quite heavily. So the Yid was pleading. He says, please, you know, have a heart. There's a lot of money, whatever. Anyway, so the judge says, okay, I'll have rachmanis on you. I don't know if you use that word, but he said, I'll have pity on you and I'll let you off this time, but the next time, for the next day, court date, don't you dare come a minute late. If you're late, then I'm really going to give it to you twice as worth. Okay, so he thanked the judge for his rachmanis, and that was that. So sure enough, the next second trial date came, and the Yid was knew he really, really had to be on time, so he left nice and early from his house. But as things would have it, he ran into tremendous traffic jams, and he came into the parking lot of the court just like minutes before his time for his trial. And he knew that, oh boy, if he's late, he's in big trouble. And the problem was that he couldn't find a parking space. He's driving up and down and up and down the aisles. There's not one space. He goes, oh no, in a couple of minutes I have to be in the courtroom. And he was going to, what was he going to do? So he figured, okay, what do I have to do? I have to make a neder. And he says, Hashem, he says, if you you find for me a parking space, then I'll give to tzedakah. And this is about to say the sum of 500 shekels. A car pulls out right in front of him. Perfect timing. So he says, Hashem, it's okay. I managed. I'm okay. It's Torah Rabbah. Anyways. And he pulls up into the spot. And he arrives on time to the courtroom. Everything's fine. So afterwards, yeah, the Shiloh, he says, you know, all I said was I'm going to give the stock. I didn't say how much. I was going to say 500 shekels, but I didn't get those words before I even had a chance to say it. Space opened up. So my question is, he asked, do I have to give the 500 shekels? Do I have to give the 500 shekels or not? So, halachically, there is actually a machloikas post scheme. If a person decides to give tzedakah, but he doesn't say it verbally, he just thinks it. He decides in his mind that he wants to give tzedakah, does that make him obligated or not? So, the Ramah paskind in Yoredeh, the end of Siman Reish and Ches, that it does. It does chal. He is obligated. If he thinks that he's going to give tzedakah, he now has to give it. However, the Aruch HaShulchan points out that that's only if it's specific. You know, if he thinks in his mind he's going to give 500 shekels of tzedakah, then he has to give 500 shekels of tzedakah. But if he just thinks in general that he's going to give tzedakah, so then he's not obligated to, because it wasn't specific. Okay, so back to our Shaila, you'll say that, here it was specific. You know, he said he was going to give a certain, if I want to give in his, he thought at least he was going to give 500 shekels to tzedakah, but if the spot opened, and it did. However, that's not so simple. Why? Because in the Sefer Derech Emuna, he points out in the name of the Marsham that which we said, that if a person thinks about giving tzedakah, that makes him obligated, that's only in the case where he had in mind just to think about it, that he's going to give, and that's what he did. However, if he had in mind to say it, he had in mind that he verbally to say what he wants to do, and he didn't get it out, he didn't say what he wanted to say, so then he's not obligated. So here, in our case, that's basically what happened. Reuven, or the person this yid, he wanted to verbally say that he's going to give 500 shekels if a spot opens up. He did not say it. He said the beginning of it, he's going to give, and then the spot opened up before he said 500 shekels. So since here he wanted to verbally say it, and he didn't, so now he is not obligated. So that is how it comes out. Basically, the bottom line halachically, then in our situation here, the yid does not have to give the 500 shekels. However, that's as far as the strict letter of the halacha goes, of Shulchan Aruch. However, there's something else, there's like they say, you know, the fifth chelik of the Shulchan Aruch. And here we have a situation of a karasatov. I mean, come on, Hashem did this guy a great favor and helped him out and you know, brought him a spot at the last minute. So he owes a little bit of a karas hatov, or maybe a lot of a karas hatov to Kadosh Baruch Hu after what he did. And if he just ignores it and says, oh, good, I'm not chayav, goodbye, he says, that's called being kofer b'tavaso shel makom. Here's Hashem's doing you a toiva and you just, you know, just ignore it. So he says, therefore, on a Musar level, at least, you know, he should give the money to the tzedakah, the full amount of 500 shekels. Just end with an interesting little attachment over here that was asked of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And that was the following. It says in the Gemara and Ksuba stuff, Nun, actually the Shulchan Aruch brings it in Yoradiyah Siman Reish Mem Tesifala. Says there was a takana in a place called Usha, where it says that Hamavazbez al Yavazbez Yoser Michomesh. That if a person, when giving staka, he should not give more than 20%. Again, we're talking about your average person, somebody who's very, very wealthy, you know, multimillionaire. You can give to more than 20%. It's not going to affect him. But we're talking about a person, your average person, should not give more than 20% because it's liable to put him in the poorhouse, and then he's going to have to himself, ask for tzedakah. So he shouldn't give more than 20%. So the question was asked of Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita. This person in our story, right? He halachically, we said, did not have to give that 500 shekels. It's a nice idea anyways, on a Musar level, because of a Kar Satov to Hashem. But let's say giving this 500 shekels would push him over the 20% mark. And I was, he already has been, giving staka. And if he gives this 500 shekels, going to push him over, and he's going to be giving more than the 20% that we said one should not do. Should he still give this 500 shekels or not? Interesting question. So Rav Chaim answered based on a Avas Chesed, a sefer about stock, etc., written by the Chafetz Chaim. And he says an interesting thing over there. Chafetz Chaim relates that we see from this takana that Chachami made, that a person shouldn't give more than 20% because it could make him poor. That if that's the case when it comes to tzedakah, which is such a chashuva thing, a big, big mitzvah, and when it comes to mitzvahs, a person has to be careful not to go overboard, says the Chafetz Chaim, how much more so when it comes to a person's physical needs, that he shouldn't overspend, go over his budget, buying a fancy car, fancy this, fancy that. You're not supposed to go overboard when it comes to mitzvahs, and they limited it for 20%. So all the more so, you should limit yourself when it comes to your physical needs, and just keep it to what your bare minimum. Don't go overboard. For mitzvahs, you don't go overboard. Kol shekein for the gashmias. And the Chafetz Chaim, he ends though, and he says that those people that do go overboard on their gashmias, he says, it's probably not shayak for them, the takana avusha either, meaning, such a person, when it comes to his physical things, he spends more than 20% for, right? But when it comes to mitzvahs, I can't spend 20%. You can't be hypocritical. If you're going to already go overboard on your physical needs, so you can't say, mitzvahs, I can't go more than 20%. that's not fair. Mamela said, Rav Chaim, we're asking about this person who was given the parking space. Well, you have to look into his who type of guy he is. As if he's driving a fancy car, has a fancy house, and all, etc., and he goes overboard when it comes to his physical things, then he can go overboard here as well and give the 500 shekels, even if it can take him over the 20%. But if, in fact, he's a person that's very careful and doesn't overspend and buys what he needs. So then such a person, it could be that he shouldn't give the 500 shekels over here if it takes him over the 20% limit. We shall be zoiche to be those that are oyve chesed staka, roide staka v'chesed. Hashem should see all our efforts and crown them with tremendous, tremendous chuyos, and the ultimate chus of coming, the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu v'meheru yameinu.